Welcome back to the Rire on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Rire, joined as always by my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard. Brent, of course, longtime college football analyst, most recently for First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, also a voter for one of the more convoluted sort of races for an individual award of its stature this season when we talk about the Heisman Trophy. And Brent, that seems to be an ever-changing situation on a week-to-week basis. And I'm guessing on some level it changed even after this last weekend.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Trav, good to be with you as always. I mean, as we look at this award, I mean, you've certainly got you're going from like one quarterback at Ole Miss to the next one. You've got an Alabama quarterback in Ty Simpson, who no one gave a shot to earlier in the year, who now, help me on this, but I think has zero interceptions,
zero turnovers for Alabama. Period.
Yeah,
through four games. Yeah,
who is doing extremely well, and on the other end of the spectrum, we've got say quarterbacks in Auburn and Oklahoma due to injury, and then just what, Trav, just probably struggling as much as anything else, who are no longer in the race. So you know that. If your husband voted, you kind of like that you don't have someone that carries you through the whole year.
Yeah, a game we're going to talk about coming up in just a little bit in Tuscaloosa, Alabama on Saturday afternoon. Yep. Could go a long way in really shaping could. The Heisman race. Diego Pavia and also, of course, the aforementioned Ty Simpson will get into Doors and Tide in just a little bit. Carson Beck, I guess, had the weekend off, so out of sight, out of mind a little bit, but again, a fascinating race and one that will certainly, I'm guessing, come down to conference championship weekend and right on through that early December weekend. So, Brent, let's talk about this weekend's slate of SEC action. A little bit abbreviated, but still a handful of conference matchups. We got in season standards, probably quite a few teams on the bye week, but we'll start right there in the noon Eastern window on Saturday. The rebounding Georgia Bulldogs coming off that disappointing home loss to the Alabama Crimson Tide last Saturday night at Sanford Stadium, looking to get right against the visiting Wildcats of Kentucky. I don't know about you, Brent. This game for me, Georgia 20.5-point favorite. Feels like it's kind of up to Georgia. Although I will say this, when you look at Georgia statistically right now, that's just an average football team.
Yeah.
Certainly by Georgia standards, whether you look at, you know, offensive numbers, defensive numbers, they're right in that sort of 8-12 range. And a lot of those where Southeastern Conference teams are concerned.
Yeah. And by the way, Kirby Smart 1-4 against Alabama, 55-2 against everybody else. That's amazing. And that's over the last 5 years. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's just the last 5 years. I think he's what, 1-7 overall now?
Yeah, absolutely. Now against Kentucky, Georgia's won 15 straight in the series, 26-28. So I would say that that's domination. But Trav, you and I both remember last year's game was 13-12 in Kentucky. Frankly, what led 9-6 going into the fourth quarter. Georgia took the lead with 12.5 minutes to go, and Kentucky pulled still within a little bit more. So the reality is, how does Kentucky continue to play? They're struggling. So few coaches let go last year. We may have several who are let go this year. And unfortunately, Mark Stoops, who I appreciate and I like for his longevity. But the reality is, Trav, I think we both know Kentucky probably will not win this game. And unfortunately, will not win very many more games a season.
It does look like Zach Calzada, I guess, is probable to play on Saturday for Kentucky at the quarterback position. You know, Georgia just has not started games the way they would like. Last couple of times out, falling behind by two scores. And you do that to the likes of Tennessee and Alabama, you're probably going to have a hard time winning games. Yeah. Even if that's the case, though, this week, I can still see Georgia at home digging out and getting the job done. I guess a Kentucky team, here's the problem with even getting behind Kentucky. They run the ball well enough.
They do.
To kind of shrink this game. And they played Ole Miss tough.
They did.
A couple of Saturdays ago. Now, that was at Kroger Field up in the Commonwealth. This is going to be on the road. But, again, if Georgia can't start faster, you know, Kentucky's going to feel better and better about itself moving deeper into that game, and we'll have a little bit of a positive experience from the Ole Miss loss to maybe sort of keep themselves in this. I still like Georgia to win. I think Georgia will be in control, but I don't know if Georgia covers the 20.5. I wouldn't feel comfortable laying that right now with the way we saw Gunnar Stockton play against Alabama. Yeah. That wasn't good enough.
No.
And it felt like that sort of caught up to Georgia in that game. Felt like they had kind of gotten away with it at Tennessee. He probably played above his skill set and where he's at in his development right now. Didn't get away with it against Alabama. You could probably get away with it this week. But when you start jumping back into the legitimate competition in this league, Gunnar Stockton's going to have to play at a lot higher level.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And speaking of quarterback, same thing at Kentucky. You mentioned Zach Calzada, who, Trav, has been in the league, what, about a good half a dozen years, it seems.
Yeah.
Now, Cutter Bowley, that people thought was going to be your – Kentucky quarterback, that has not worked out that way, and Calzada has taken over. But at the same time, I think you and I both know that this is a team that's struggling, and it won't be – and look, I hope he does well. I like Stoops in a lot of ways. He's been great for the conference. But at some point, do they need to go their separate ways – just to bring that program up from where it is now?
It does feel stagnant. There's no getting around that. And my hope is that if it does go down, it's sort of a mutual parting of ways.
I agree.
So that there is, you know, a legacy that deserves to be celebrated, maybe not in the immediate aftermath, but the further you get away from the Mark Stoops era, there's a great chance it's going to look better and better, 8 or 9 straight bowl games in a row. Now, I think Kentucky, like Arkansas and some of the other teams in the bottom half of the league, once you started bringing in the Oklahoma and Texases on top of what you already had, that pushed some of those teams that were 6-6, 7-5 to that sort of 5-7, 4-8 range. I think that's where Kentucky finds itself right now. And it, to your point, might be time. We'll see how still – you know, 8 games to go. We'll see how it goes. And certainly narratives, as we know, Brent, can change, can stop and pivot on a dime in the Southeastern Conference. Let's talk about 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central on Saturday. This is a very interesting window because the two games you probably want to watch more than any other of the games in the Southeastern Conference are head-to-head. Texas traveling to Florida. This was a game back in the offseason so many people were excited about. If for nothing else, the quarterback matchup. You were going to have Arch and Lagway. And now, unless you have a rooting interest in this game, and I think that Manning name is still going to attract a lot of eyeballs every time Arch takes a snap.
Absolutely.
But in terms of tangible accomplishments that are still out in front of a couple of quarterbacks, it's probably going to be more about the next game we talk about. But where do you sit on this, Brent, coming off a bye week, right, for both of these teams? And I know you talked to some Gator fans earlier in the week down in Putnam County, Palatka, Florida. What was the sense you got from them? Because it almost feels like, you want to beat Texas, but if you go on another one of those runs like you did over the last five games of last season – you could find yourself right back in this situation a year from now.
You really could. They're certainly not happy. They understand. I think that probably the Florida coaching staff is at the point where they have gone and, I mean, they have been average in a lot of ways. They ended well last year, but you've got a quarterback right now in DJ Lagway who is just not healthy. Mm-hmm. And how deep into the quarterback depth chart are they willing to go at this point? Now, Texas, to its credit, now this is fascinating to me, seeking their 10th straight road conference victory. Now, Trev, when you come into this conference and you win 10 straight in the road, on the road, that's pretty impressive, frankly. But again, the thing that we cannot ignore and won't is what is going to happen to Billy Napier. And the reality of it is, I think, and certainly at the Putnam County Gator Club, they appreciate Billy, but they are also very much aware that that it's time to go and that they need to make I want to say better hire. That's not quite what I want to say as much as it's a more a hire that with and the names I'm going to mention, Lane Kiffin of Ole Miss, Eli Drinkwith of Missouri, John Sumrall of Tulane, Fran Brown of Syracuse, Ryan Silverfield of Memphis, John Gruden of NFL fame, mm-hmm. and Marcus Freeman of Notre Dame, it's too early in his career to make the move now. And this is something I know you're very much aware of, that some in the Florida administration really don't want Kiffin. Mm-hmm. But I will say in defense of Kiffin that particularly after his dad died, Kiffin has matured and had done a really very good job at Ole Miss. You know, have they won anything? No, I admit that. But you've still got a really good coach in Lane Kiffin, a much better defense than you would think. Eli Drinkwith is impressive. So, Trav, frankly, unfortunately, but it's what we got. The the stories off the field in this game are probably more on people's minds than the game itself.
Yeah, especially with Napier and his status at the top of that list. I think in terms of the game itself, you know, the total for this game, the over-under in Vegas has dropped all the way down to just north of 40 total points.
Wow.
That is the total for this game. And it kind of speaks to the struggles. I mean, really, yeah, Texas, the last time we really checked in on Texas, mm-hmm. it seemed so long ago, it's like a spring game.
Yeah, really
it was
does,
August 30th, the last time we really watched Texas.
Right.
That was the Ohio State game.
Yeah.
In week one. It's mm-hmm. October the 2nd.
Yeah.
We're just now checking back in on Texas.
Yeah.
Now, you kind of monitor and keep tabs on things week to week. And based on those results, it wasn't anything that kind of blew you away, especially from an Arch/Texas offense perspective. And then, you know, you also consider the run game, as we've talked about here, hasn't been good enough for mm-hmm. Texas. And you've got Trey Wisner listed as questionable for this game. Yeah. CJ Baxter's listed as doubtful. And so mm-hmm. even though for Florida, defensive lineman Caleb Banks, among others, mm-hmm. is out, I can easily see this game being 17-13, 20-17, and something under those 40 points, 41 points that we're seeing out in Vegas right now.
And to end of the injury situation, Trav, cornerback Dijon Johnson, season-ending surgery for a knee injury, and so he's gone now. And now, you know, it's debatable how much he may have played, but your point, for various reasons, the injury list on this Gator team grows by the week, doesn't it?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Dallas Wilson going to be available for Florida offensively, I guess, this week.
Yeah.
The five-star freshman wide receiver, you would think that would help. Paxton checking in here via the live show chat. By the way, we appreciate you tuning in live on a Thursday night and chiming in here with the comments. Paxton notes that rain chances going down for Texas, Florida on Saturday. Yeah, being here in Northeast Florida, Paxton, it's been sort of tropical with the rain showers even today in the Jacksonville area. So we'll see how that goes throughout the weekend. And Paxton also says, Brent, Sark's been vanilla until now. It's October. It's Sarktober. How about that? Yeah. You like that? Yeah.
Well,
it's Sark month.
I do like that because I like the Sci-Fi Channel too. but Trav, look, and I'll be brief on this. Texas is nowhere where they want to be right now either, because the Manning they've got at quarterback has certainly had his share of struggles, and I think their defense right now is what's keeping them in the game. To your point also of that, that's why that the final score for this game, Trav, could be in the low 20s.
Yeah, the one aspect of this football game that I trust is probably Texas's defense.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't trust – if Florida was healthier, I would say the same thing probably about the Gators. And I think the Gators' defense will still make it tough with got available. Mm-hmm. But Texas, I think, defensively, in large part, can win this game. And if you're asking me if I'm going with Sark or Billy Napier at this point, dialing it up, well, you know, I don't even think I need to answer that one. I think we all know how that's going to go. So could be a retro SEC game, Brent, but with a new member in the SEC at Florida Field on Saturday afternoon. Also at 3:30 Eastern on Saturday. How about number 16? I said number 16, Vanderbilt at number 10, Alabama.
Yes.
Vanderbilt coming off its latest score fest, blitzkrieg offensively against, you know, this is weird even saying, an outmanned Utah State team, because there were a lot of years. There's been a lot of years where Vanderbilt was outmanned by Utah State.
It's true.
This isn't that Vanderbilt team. And it's not just a Diego Pavia thing or an Eli Stowers thing. This is a solid all-around football team making its way to Tuscaloosa. And Diego is making no qualms about it in terms of his expectation going into Tuscaloosa and getting the job done on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, this is a fascinating game in a lot of ways. And Trav, would it be safe to say that one of the real reasons game day is in Tuscaloosa is partly Alabama, but a lot Vanderbilt?
Diego.
Diego, absolutely.
I've said this before. Good for Clark Lee. I'm glad he's riding this crest and this wave, and I think there's, in a lot of ways, things that he's done to improve that program. But come on. I mean, 2023, I was at that season opener in Nashville.
Yes.
That place was a mausoleum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure it was.
That program was starting that typical drain swirl that we've seen from so many other regimes in Nashville on the West End. Diego, not just Diego, Tim Beck. People don't talk about Tim Beck nearly enough coming over from New Mexico State with Diego. And Stowers, another player or two, Jerry Kill, obviously. That has totally changed the direction of Vanderbilt football these last couple of years. Am I convinced that Vandy's going to sustain this once that regime or that faction moves on? No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But, man, what a hell of a run it has been.
It really is.
You know, look, Alabama's a 10.5-point favorite on Saturday after knocking off the Georgia Bulldogs in Athens last Saturday night. How do you feel about that sort of spread there, Brent? Do you think that's a little much, or are you thinking Alabama has hit its stride now, especially on the offensive side of the ball with Ty Simpson, those receivers, Ryan Grubb dialing it up, and maybe we'll just score a little too much for Vandy to threaten the Crimson Tide for a second straight year?
Well, that's a fascinating question. Vanderbilt, the oldest roster in the league, a staggering 26 graduate players, 50 more upperclassmen.
They are old.
So they have been around the block with that. Look, we know what Diego Pavia can do. They've scored 31 points in all their five games. Eli Stowers, as you mentioned, is really good. But I think, and they've had four different leading rushers, Michaela Young, Jamizel Lassiter.
Yeah.
I mean, these are games that people or names that people don't often know. But and look, to me, in this league, if you can stop the run, you can do something. Vanderbilt is the third best rushing defense, 79 yards a game in the league.
They are. They're as complete as you'll ever see Vanderbilt. And you mentioned Young at the running back position, New Mexico State transfer.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing how extensive that haul from the West has benefited Vanderbilt. But I think with Diego too, and what I love about him the most is that he is truly an elite competitor. At the end of the day, he is that sort of veteran welterweight that you might win on points, but he's really going to be hard to knock out. And you might knock him down a couple of times. And I think of physical toughness. I mean, because you'll see the guy just take some big, big hits, and he takes on stuff. You know, he's not Tim Tebow in size. I mean, he's not diminutive, I wouldn't say. He is well put together. But lost in all that is the fact the guy throws the football pretty damn well.
He does.
He's averaging 9.8 yards per attempt. Now, you can look at the Vandy run game and think, well, that has something to do with it. And it absolutely does. He's completing 75% of his passes, and he's averaging 6.1 yards per carry. So, again, all due respect to everybody else involved with Vanderbilt football. And look, give Clark Lee credit too.
He
was the deciding factor in bringing all those folks over.
He was.
And boy, what a smart decision that was. Eli Stowers is such an X factor for that. Not even really an X factor. He's a factor, big time factor in that offense because of how they can use him. Not a traditional tight end, but they can do some different things. Beck is so good with getting him the football when everybody in the stadium knows the ball's going to nine.
Yeah.
And he still gets it to him. Sowers has 22 catches this season, 301 yards, two touchdowns. Last year against Alabama, Eli Stowers, six catches, 113. And Vanderbilt, more explosive than it was a year ago, which takes us to the Alabama defense. And too many explosive runs for Georgia last Saturday night. Kind of kept the explosive pass plays to a minimum. Did give up the bust to Colby Young for the touchdown. Should have given up another one on a deep ball that was dropped by Taylor, the true freshman for Georgia. That's where it's at for me with the Alabama defense. They've got to figure out a way to be more sound on a down-in, down-out basis, not have lion eyes, I call it. Their eyes lie so much.
Yes.
If they don't, it won't just be third and fours that they have to worry about like they did a year ago against Vanderbilt when the Commodores converted 12 of 18 in that win over the Crimson Tide. If Vandy gets the explosive plays going too, this is a game, Alabama. It's a good thing Ty Simpson's playing well.
Yeah.
Because really Alabama might need to score not just into the 40s, but maybe well into the 40s.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I agree. And to your point on defense, linebacker Quay Russo with a foot injury, John Marion Lathan with a neck injury. So, I mean, they're going pretty deep on that side of the defense. In getting folks in there, I think what is amazing to me so far with Alabama is the play of Ty Simpson. I think we knew he would be good, but what he has done and not and having 11 touchdowns and zero interceptions. Now, Trav, he made some big boy throws against Georgia, did he not?
Confident. On time, accurate. The disparity between Simpson's level of play and Stockton's was immense. That was a wide, wide gulf in that game. I could see this game Saturday being reminiscent of Alabama A&M round two with Manziel.
Yeah.
When Alabama went out to College Station. And what was that, like a 49-42 game?
Yes.
And A&M jumped Alabama early.
They sure did.
Manziel was well into his bag. Mm-hmm. Alabama had the better team, kind of like Georgia against Tennessee a couple weeks ago, maintained its poise, didn't lose itself, came back, got the job done on the road. Now, Vandy, in this instance, going to be the team on the road. No, by the way, it sounds like Johnny Manziel going to be there Saturday.
Yeah.
Owls now with Diego.
that will be interesting to say the least. I think the loss last year and Alabama being a more mature team will help them in this game. Now, they've obviously got Missouri around the corner at Missouri, and that's for another day and another discussion. But I tell you this, Trev, I don't think Vanderbilt takes them by. There'll be no secrets this time from Vandy. Now, Vandy can they can man up and do what they need to do. Big win for Alabama, but I think it actually helps them to play Vanderbilt in a revenge type game that Nick Saban used to thrive on games like.
Yeah, this. The win over Georgia was huge for Alabama on multiple levels. Psyche being chief among them, mm-hmm. not just for that football team, but That's right. Coaching staff and that entire fan base.
Yes,
because to be 2-2 basically at the end of September, that wasn't going to be well received, as you might think. I think that yes, in this football game, there's no sneaking up on Alabama, but I think Vanderbilt's good enough that they don't. Vanderbilt forever's had to sneak up on people.
Yeah.
I think Vanderbilt's good enough they don't have to sneak up mm-hmm. on Alabama, and they can still win. Now, if Alabama continues to keep that turnover column clean and protect Ty Simpson, and mm-hmm. those receivers continue to do their thing. I think for Alabama, the key is just get off the field a couple of times each half. If they can do that, they'll win, I think, the game. But no, I wouldn't feel comfortable at all about laying that 10.5, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. at home against Diego and the Doors. Brent, also in that similar type of time frame on Saturday, the Oklahoma Sooners, even without John Mateer, here's how bad Kent State is.
Yeah,
they've given up 260 burgers already,
right?
Including one to Florida State. Mm-hmm. This isn't Nick Saban's Kent State, okay? No. the Sooners with Michael Hawkins, right, at quarterback this week. John Mateer out. Still a 44.5 point favorite in that 4:00 Eastern kickoff on SEC Network.
Boy, if you're the Golden Flashes, you play Texas Tech, Florida State, and now Oklahoma. Boy, they Trev, and in those three losses, giving up 64 points per game. Now John Mateer, obviously with the hand injury, is the is really the off the field story of the game. Frankly, now they've got. Kent State's got an interim head coach in Mark Carney, who is the offensive coordinator. Kenny Burns, their previous head coach, was fired in April for some mm-hmm. violations on his contract. But big win for Oklahoma last week. We'll get in Auburn in a minute. But my stars, I know some of this is Auburn's fault, but Auburn, I think, Trav, had, 1 yard? In the fourth quarter, which is amazing to think about that. But they had an off week. We've got Kent State this week. Hard to say how soon Mateer can be back, but this is a game that will they'll barely break a sweat in this one.
Yeah, it comes the injury to Mateer obviously comes at a bad time. But if that was going to happen, the bye week and then a game like this. To kind of get Hawkins reacquainted, and it's not even so much reacquainted because it's a new system. So every rep he can get in Arbuckle's system has got to be perceived to be a positive, even though the Mateer injury certainly is not. So as we move to the capper for Saturday in SEC play, Mississippi State coming off absolute heartbreak last Saturday night, in Starkville, falling to Tennessee in a game that took extra snaps to decide how does State respond to that? Right. Yeah. You know, well, in some instances, a team that has been winless, like State has been in the SEC for so long, it might drive them even more, knowing that, hey, we got this close against a really quality team in Tennessee and we can actually do this. You know, they've continued to maybe reaffirm to themselves that they are much better than they were a year ago. So Texas, it's pretty surprising to look at the Aggies and see that number six next to them, but why not at this point? Right. I mean, I asked myself that question earlier today, how's Texas A&M six in the country? And I said, well, who are five better teams?
Yeah.
And, I kind of struggled with that.
Well, and A&M has 10 players with at least one sack and averages an SEC high 3.5 sacks per game. They've scored on all 12 of their trips in the red zone. This is a guy you and I talked about preseason, KC Concepcion, coming over from NC State. 20 catches, including 18 try for either first down or touchdown. Lord, that's a pretty good start for the season. But look, to your point, State 10 passing plays of at least 40 yards, the most in the SEC, and five of those with 50. Fluff Bothwell, which is certainly one of the better names in the league, fourth in rushing. But and maybe the biggest thing that catches my eye, Mississippi State last year, an SEC worst 12 turnovers the whole year, Trav, and they've got 10 already, seven picks and three fumble recoveries. Mercy.
Yeah, that's a big number. You know, Elko is kind of put his thumbprint on that thing as a defensive guy, you know, and so Lebby going in there is very much an offensive guy. That's going to be a fun matchup. Both are still very new in their tenures with their respective positions. So I've been very impressed by what Lebby's been able to do. I do think this game can be very competitive because I think State has improved defensively enough to hang around. Right. Yeah. And I haven't seen enough. Now look, you know, we've seen A&M at Notre Dame score some points. Right. And then, you know, we've kind of seen some grinders too from the Aggies. So, you know, I think this is a game that will be within reach for Mississippi State. And with a quarterback like Blake Shapen, Brennan Thompson, I guess, is beat up a little bit at the wide receiver position. If they can get it in that spot late, they'll have a chance with Shapen in there, I think. But I'm going to go with Marcel Reed in the Aggies myself. What about you?
I agree with that. And I tell you what, Le'Veon Moss, 139 against a really good Auburn defense. Trav, you and I said last year, before he got hurt, Moss was a top five running back in the league. If he is healthy throughout the year, what could he do?
Yeah, it's kind of like the CJ Baxters and you know, some of those guys around the league. Absolutely. I mean, now look, not a lot of people are talking about Ahmad Hardy of Missouri, who's off this weekend.
True.
And he's just run for 730 in five games and nine touchdowns. Really? But no, to your point, A&M's backfield in general, you know, their ability to run Reuben Owens at you, to run Le'Veon Moss at you, they've got a – and they complement each other well with Amari Daniels and what he can do dynamically as a running back. The depth there, that's actually where I think the game could really lean towards A&M is, you know, having that luxury with those guys and then, you know, the way that defense seems to be trending under Mike Elko.
Which makes this a fascinating game in a lot of ways.
It is. It'll be a fun way to cap the night. I hope that it is ultra competitive. We've got, I guess, on ABC Saturday night is Miami, Florida State, I believe. Yeah. So that's got something to do with, I guess, the way the games were staggered, having two games at 3:30 like that. That's interesting to me. I guess you've also maybe got some playoff baseball going on as well. So it's interesting as much as anything for me this week in terms of the television schedule, how it laid out. Yeah, but as we said earlier, teams on the bye week, You got Missouri. You've got
South Carolina.
Auburn, South Carolina, Tennessee. That's a good number of teams with the week off. Arkansas, obviously big news. Man. Out in Fayetteville is Bob. Bob is back in the saddle.
Yeah, he is.
Yes, he is.
Trev, now, you and I have covered this league, and we've basically been doing sports together since the early 90s. Okay. And I know you picked up on this. Now, most interim coaches aren't hiring and firing the Monday after.
I love that Bobby went in there and just overturned the defensive staff. Like, well, I'm here to stay. I mean, do you think he just took over Pitt's office too? I bet he was in Pitt's office.
Yes.
By sundown Monday.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Bobby. Oh yeah. Yeah. And Trav, this is not an interim situation in Pitt's mind either, is it?
No. Bobby is like, well, you know, we're back and riding here.
Yeah.
And even with the proliferation of analysts and things like that on staffs now, that's a lot of defensive coaching to get rid of, four games into the season. So that was going to be an interesting aspect of all that, but absolutely not. My first thought when I saw the departures on the defensive side was this isn't Bobby for getting ready for the rest of the season here.
Yeah.
This is Bobby getting settled back in. So
Bobby Petrino. Now, real quick, I'll give Sam Pittman some credit. You got your AD making the statement before the season begins that we're not sure how much we can compete, which probably didn't go over real well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Petrino is not listening to that either. But Trav, the reality is Arkansas. Tough losses to Memphis and Ole Miss, and then you got a chance to really do something against Notre Dame, and it was over. People say it was over halftime. Trav, I'm not sure it was over it by the end of the first quarter. We bid Sam Pittman goodbye, and I thought Sam did a pretty good job. Overall, he didn't have a winning record, but they were competitive most of the time. But Petrino not taking any prisoners at this point, is he?
Paxton, the Texas fan chiming in here, says Sam Pittman smoked my horns in 2021. He had some wins. He did. And for a minute there, it looked like it was trending the right direction. It's pretty amazing that with a talent like Talon Green at quarterback, they haven't been more successful the last 2 years. Because if you just tune in for 5 to 10 minutes of Arkansas football here or there, and you see what they do at the quarterback position, it's when you turn it away and you don't see some of that stuff. I think it's the up and down nature of that thing. Kind of the poor man's Florida. Florida, there's no excuse for not being 8+ wins every year. Yes. Arkansas, there are some legitimate built-in big-time issues. Mm-hmm. Paxton's also asking here. He realizes it's an SEC show. He wants some thoughts on Baylor, Kansas State. I'll say this. I'm surprised Kansas State has been as bad as it's been.
Me too.
I think they're coming off a win over UCF, but, losing at Arizona, that isn't Jed Fish's Arizona either. That's not the same deal right now. So Sawyer Robertson, quarterback for Baylor, highly regarded apparently in NFL circles. I personally don't see it with Sawyer Robertson, who at one time was at Mississippi State. That's still one where I'd probably go home team. K-State's in Manhattan in that game, I'd probably still go K-State.
And I'll tell you this, if Baylor had beaten Auburn to start the season on that Friday night, it may have been a different story for them, frankly. But, I would back up what you said about that. Pretty, appreciate the question. Non-SEC or not?
Yeah. We like talking the college football around the country. Absolutely. So we'll continue to see what unfolds, Brent, on the coaching ranks. And Hugh Freeze, one of those guys to go along with Billy Napier. And for Auburn, I guess, if I'm an Auburn fan, I'm thinking, you know, this still, the offense cannot be an issue in year three.
Yeah.
Under Hugh Freeze. It can. Yeah,
yes.
And, you know, I think Jackson Arnold does some solid things at the quarterback position. And you always want to point to the quarterback. And I do think he's limited in terms of his ceiling as a passer.
Yeah.
But they've almost become what Florida was when Florida went, it seemed like a decade with offensive line problems.
Right. Yes.
It doesn't seem like Auburn can get to a point right now where they can get five good players on the field together on that offensive line.
Well, and right now they're 111th in penalties, 69 per game.
That doesn't help.
And the one that really sticks out to me like a sore thumb, their number 103rd down conversions with Hugh.
Yeah.
They were 18-34 on third down in the first three games, 3 of 28 Trav against Oklahoma and A&M. Now the other thing I see happening is the Auburn beat writers are slowly turning to be more critical of Hugh,
which means they may have gotten the signal.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, Trav, what about running the ball? Jeremiah Cobb, Demari Austin, 62 carries in the Ball State and South Alabama game in the last two games, 21. Yeah. 21. So
I'd be interested to see how many times Jackson Arnold ran it and or was sacked.
Oh, yeah.
I know in the Oklahoma game.
Yeah.
It was double digits-ish.
Now,
in terms of sacks, and I've said this before, it just feels like in college football this year we got a lot of the same kind of quarterback. Haynes King, Diego, and you know that Jackson Arnold, a lot of these same kind of guys. Gunnar Stockton, right?
Yes,
we got a lot of those guys this year.
Yeah, well, and the reality of it is, it's not getting easier for Auburn. They've got a big pregame next week. Georgia comes to town. If they play real well, they may can make that a close game. But I can see Georgia winning that game. And Trav, I think they, if I remember this right, I think they've got Missouri coming up. So they're gonna be. There are going to be a lot of these Auburn beat writers writing about Hugh's future by midseason.
Yeah, I mean, this is gauntlet time, man. When that calendar flips to October, it was such an advantage to the elite recruiting teams four or 5 years ago.
Yes.
Because they could withstand the inevitable attrition and injuries and things like that. Their rosters were built for it. With the portal and everything else, even the so-called elite aren't built that way anymore. And you think of Alabama in that regard. Georgia last week. Well, now you go Vandy top 20. You go to Missouri next week. You get South Carolina, Tennessee in some order.
Yeah.
Before you get to the bye week. So when you start with Georgia at the front end of that gauntlet, I think you're looking at, if we go 4-1 through that, or and you include LSU maybe as the sixth game in that gauntlet, you go 5-1 through that, and you come out the other side, but then you still got Oklahoma and Auburn on the road.
That's
where we're at, and we're not even to 9 SEC games yet.
No. And now a couple of things to kind of balance out the conversation here. A couple of the teams, Missouri – with Bo Pribula and Ahmad Hardy, as you mentioned, Kevin Coleman playing extremely good football. They are off this week. And got to mention too, the Lane train is going well. Trav, Trinidad Chambliss Against LSU, but basically against anybody he's played, he's just been an absolute star in the making. And give Lane credit with this, and obviously Lane's name's mentioned with FSU, but Scott Strickland, I'm curious what you've heard, is not on that Lane train very, very much at all, but boy, oh boy, Ole Miss, Missouri, really doing well right now, and an LSU team, Trav, that needs some help, to say the least, too.
Yeah, offensively, LSU's just not good enough. And the concerns you had for LSU going in the Clemson game are still the same concerns you have for them coming out of the Ole Miss loss, is that if they can't complement Nussmeier in the passing game with some semblance of a run game.
Yeah.
See, and they're not built like Alabama. I know people look at that and say, well, Alabama's not really running the football. Well, they're running an offense, though, that supplements the run game. They've got a legitimate screen game. They got a legitimate quick game now with Ty Simpson at quarterback. LSU doesn't have anything like that. It feels like it's Nuss is going to drop back or sit in that pocket and try to deliver intermediate to deep balls for 60 minutes. And then when they can't run it, it impacts them in terms of protection too. They can't protect him well enough. And it's kind of a shame because LSU defensively has been everything they need to be. Trinidad Chambliss, I could not be more impressed, the Ole Miss quarterback, in terms of the move he made from the level he was at to where I don't really see him right now when I watch him as playing at that highest high level relative to other quarterbacks. Now, relative to his story and background, again, I'm like everybody else. But do I look at Trinidad Chambliss right now and go, oh, wow, you know, this guy, I'd rather face Trinidad Chambliss right now than Diego Pavia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That way.
Yeah. Yes.
And not to devalue again what we've seen from Chambliss, but I just, it's been very impressive, no doubt.
And by the way, you mentioned the LSU run game in the Trav. LSU's leading rusher in the last game, 22 yards.
Yeah, and they've had, you know, they've had an injury there too, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's Caden Durham.
Yes.
That's not good. Paxton, Hattie May, how you doing? Hattie May with a what's up for you, Brent.
Yeah.
Paxton, he's saying Arch can get back on the Heisman list if he lights up Florida and Oklahoma. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Two big stages coming up.
Absolutely.
It's not in a position where there's a clear cut two or three guys right now. And with Mateer out too, it's a week to week thing right now with that Heisman race. And for Ty Simpson, it's been a great three game run, but he's got to keep stacking it, you know.
Yeah.
Pavia, probably more so than any quarterback because of where he plays, is going to have to be better throughout the course of the season than some other guys in this race.
Oh yeah. And Trav, just a quick word about a couple other teams. Tennessee, the youngest roster in the SEC. We were talking about Vanderbilt having the oldest a minute ago. Nearly half the team are freshmen. Frankly, a big win for them in overtime over Mississippi State.
Yep.
That's certainly worth a mention. South Carolina, now they are off. Also had a nice win over Kentucky, but I think it's pretty safe to say right now Tennessee, I think, is where they want to be. I don't think South Carolina is anywhere where they want to be right now.
No, it's going to be interesting with Aguilar at Tennessee to see really how he sustains over the course of the season. You know, he was sort of under the radar guy coming in. I know there was tape on him from Appalachian State and things like that. But boy, once the rest of this league kind of gets the book on you a little bit, it can become very tough. So I'm going to be interested to see if he can maintain a high level of play. Kind of like Chambliss too. Mm-hmm. You know, these imports, Mateer, Chambliss, Aguilar, you know, they've been revelations in a lot of way. Now let's see, as again, we get into October.
Yes.
And all truths yes. come to light, so to speak.
Yeah.
What exactly does that look like for some of those guys? We know with Mateer, the injury right now that he's dealing with. Well, Brent, as always, man, a lot of fun, a lot of great insight from you. And thanks to all the viewers chiming in tonight as well. Yes. We enjoyed that for sure.
And Trav, I'll leave us with this. SEC Media Days in Tampa. Next year. So and Trav, how about this for Tampa? They're going to have the 2027 Florida Georgia game, and in 28 the college football national title game. So you know, probably some pretty jealous cities like Jacksonville and Orlando over Tampa. But and look, I know that everybody, unfortunately, can't drive to Tampa, probably like you can drive to, you know, Birmingham, Atlanta, or pick a city for the media days. I know this is a long way off,
yep.
But the SEC loves to announce things like this with plenty of time. So that will be interesting when that comes around.
Yeah, there's a particular entertainment industry down there in Tampa that's going to be overjoyed.
Yeah.
To have SEC Media Days in town for a week.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that.
I think that, and I'm not talking about Busch Gardens. Okay.
Yes.
Again, though, Brent, a lot of fun. And we'll do it again next week, my man.
We will, my friend. Always enjoy it. Should be a fascinating week. A lot of SEC teams will be off, but listen, bud, you and I both know we've got quite an October to go. That was set up quite a November too.
Yeah, I mean, we're just getting going in a lot of ways. So with that, for Brent Beard, I'm Travis Ryer. Thank you all for tuning in live on a Thursday night. The show, of course, archives right there on Ryer on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube as of yet, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Hit that notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of the content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. And a thumbs up, a like would help us out tremendously as well. Once again, for Brent, I'm Travis. Until next time, so long, everybody.